First and 15 from their own 45 off the left hash. Four receivers, single setback, McMillan. Evans going to take off on the run again, escapes the backfield, changes direction, bursts into the clear at the 40. Now coming to the near sideline, 35-30. Got a lead block from Phillips. Evans steps inside, makes another man miss, and another, and two more. And somehow, and some way, Jerron Evans into the end zone. That's Houdini, 55 yards. Virginia Tech Hokies. Wow.
That is an excellent call right there. That is play-by-play. John Lazor, voice of Virginia Tech. Your home for the Hokies. Lays joins us each and every week. Brought to you by Cowan Gates, 11 attorneys on staff there for you in any case. And John Lazor joining us now. You just sound like you're having fun calling this offense.
Yeah, good morning, buddy. Yeah, you know, it's funny. We had some friends in town following the game, and we went out for dinner, and yeah, that's what we kept hearing. People are like, wow, it sounds like you and Mike are having fun. And it's hard not to. I mean, this is a team, buddy, that scored five different ways in that football game, so, and won dominantly. So the good times are flowing right now. And obviously you're having a lot of those highlight reel type plays. I mean, a 55-yard run. You had a 55-yard pass to Cam Phillips. You had the 87-yard punt return. So nothing not to like right now from a play-by-play perspective.
It's only been four games, but you take away the fumble fest of week two, and you see each week you see growth of Jerron Evans, you see growth of this offense, and you're seeing diversity of which Hokie fans, I don't know if they've ever seen here before. And I know it's an evolving offense and it's evolving game in 2016, but you can almost see if you're doing a growth chart, like it was a kid growing up, you can see that each and every week, minus week two.
Yeah, and actually, I think you'll remember me saying after the battle at Bristol, they fumbled the football quite a bit, but I actually thought Jerron Evans played pretty well in that game. I know he was responsible for one of those turnovers, but particularly in the opening portion of that game, I thought he made good decisions. And you're right, it's been something that you can incrementally see. And it's interesting the way that you all of a sudden mentally look at this offense, Wes, because lost in the fact that they eventually put up 54 points in that game against East Carolina was they went three and out on their first three series. They didn't have a first down for almost the majority, or almost the entirety, I should say, of the first quarter. But you weren't all that concerned because you know with the imagination of this offense and the number of skill position players that they have that eventually they were going to hit on something, maybe not in a big play, but hit on a scheme that was going to work. And eventually they did do that. And that's a feeling that you have when you have a good offense. And I obviously haven't been around here for years, but certainly that's a different feeling than it was last year.
I brought this up. Mike Barber, the Times Dispatch, was on with us Monday. And I brought this up to him where it was back after the Boston College game 2 weeks ago in the postgame press conference where Evans said it. And he didn't sound cocky or arrogant. He just said, he's like, this is what we can do. And he said, this is what we can do in this offense. And I want to show people and I want to show this offense how you can score 40 points a game and 49 points a game. Where in the short of the story, yes, he played at the junior college level. But this, what he's doing, what they're putting up, this may be new to a lot of people in the Blacksburg area, but this is not new to him, and it's not new to Justin Fuente either.
This is a guy that carries himself with a lot of confidence, and you could sense that from the moment that he got here. And I think a lot of us thought that maybe he was being a bit naive about the level jump in talent from junior college or where he may have been briefly at Air Force to the ACC and the FBS as a whole. And you know what? We were wrong, because I think he understands more than we do what he's capable of and what he expects. And I was in the room the day he said that, I think answering a question to Mike Barber about how we should expect greatness and this is what we expect and there's actually more. And then he went on to say the week later, I think the one that you might be talking about, that you rep something enough times, and he was talking about you go out and have success enough times, that becomes the norm. Well, he's right again in the fact that that is becoming the norm for this offense, and it's becoming the expectation at least through a month of the season.
John Lazor joining us. Hokies on a bye week, so we're kind of taking a look back here at last week's game where it's just not the offense, and it's easy to get consumed by the offense, but it was special teams. And it was defense, Lays. But right now, I'm looking across the board here, and I'm looking at the Coastal, and two things stand out. Hokies might have the most balanced defense. They might have the most solid defense. And I know it was only Boston College and East Carolina, but looking at some of these other scores and then looking at the offense, you look around the ACC Coastal, what the Hokies are doing is impressive, but it almost feels necessary just to hang with Pitt and Clemson and Louisville and Miami, what everybody else is doing in this conference.
Yeah, and I think that's understandable because you saw the Big 12 do that to some degree, didn't you? And you've seen a lot of these disciples now bleed into the other conferences, and it's because you just quite frankly can't compete with the level of lineman and trench-type player that you're able to recruit in the SEC and in the Big Ten. The Big Ten was down on that for quite some time as well because they couldn't keep up with the speed, but they've done a nice job with that over the last few years since adding some marquee coaches. So the step for the ACC is to spread it out, and that's what the Big 12 did. So now you're seeing that come over into the ACC with some success, and you really haven't seen the adaptation back to the ability to defend that. So that's what I think is exciting right now about Virginia Tech, Wes, is the fact that you feel like you have a defense that is capable, at least on the top line. Depth is still an issue, particularly at linebacker. But right now, with the players that you're deploying on your one deep, you have the ability to shut down some of those offenses as well. So that's the kryptonite, and we're about to find that out for real over the next few weeks when the Hokies match up with these teams.
Yeah, four out of the next five on the road, and we'll get into the slate of Virginia Tech as well, North Carolina, Miami, and Pitt, because October is just going to be grueling for all of the above. But looking back here before we jump ahead, it is only a third of the season in. It is only four games, but just your personal opinion, personal preference. Has this team lived up to your expectations, or in a way, has it exceeded your expectations?
It's great. It greatly exceeded my expectations, Wes, and that's not to say that I was looking at it pessimistically. I think everybody thought and believed that the Hokies should, one way or the other, be 3-1 on the season, and they actually lost the game that most would have pointed to, including myself, as the one you'd probably drop in the game against Tennessee at the Battle at Bristol. But it's the way that they're 3-1. You couldn't have gone into that game, and I thought the Hokies matched up very favorably against Boston College, but not 49-0 favorably. And I thought that they would play well and beat East Carolina, but I thought that was going to be a good game. I didn't see them putting up 54 points and winning that game in an absolute runaway. And I didn't see this defense playing this well, because you have to give credit when credit is due, and you have to admit when you're wrong. And that's the case with Andrew Motuopuaka. I'm willing to do it. I don't know if a lot of people are, but he has been the absolute glue in the middle of that defense right now. I think you've answered a lot of your questions on the defensive line. I don't think there ever really were any internally, but Tim Settle, Ricky Walker, Seth Dooley, those guys on the second wave have played so well, as has Greg Stroman, and a guy whose name you haven't heard yet, but you would if you needed him defensively, and that's Curtis Williams, has also done a tremendous job in the secondary and would be there if you got to that point. So the defense is the reason why they've exceeded my expectations so greatly.
Coming up, we'll look ahead of what this week is like, what the next week is like, and what the next few weeks are like for Virginia Tech. We'll dive into the Coastal and what's going on with the big contenders for the ACC Coastal, as well as get to a lightning round. John Laser, Wes McElroy, brought to you by Cowan Gates, 11 attorneys on staff there for you in any case, right here on Fox Sports 910. We'll go around baseball. Coming up at the top of the hour, Steve Gardner, USA Today on the wild card races, as well as where the Marlins go from here. Wes McElroy, John Laser on Fox Sports 910, brought to you by Cowan Gates. Talking the Hokies on a bye week. Should add a programming note, Coach Justin Fuente will join the show tomorrow at 8:35. But since Lays is with us and he's out there, what's the rest of this week like? Are these guys going to get any downtime or a couple days off?
I think they will over the weekend, but no, they're practicing this week. I was over at practice yesterday. They're what Coach Fuente is calling get better practices. He told me that the younger guys will probably not like them as much as the older guys. I think the more experienced guys get to rest a little bit because they've been playing game action, and the younger guys who haven't are going to try to make up for that on this bye week. But he said, we got a lot of work to do. We've got to get some of these younger guys ready to go because they're not where we want them to be when inevitable injuries happen, which fortunately haven't to this point.
I imagine some of those guys will take a little downtime Saturday to watch that North Carolina-Florida State game. Have you gotten a chance to look at the four-week stretch? If you take Virginia Tech, Pitt, North Carolina, and Miami, have you looked at like their month of October? Because it's such a bear. It's going to be really fun to see if anybody can rise to the top or if everybody just beats each other up in October.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see if one team can come out and handle that stretch in its entirety. And I think for the Hokies, you look at the fact that it's on the road. That's the biggest endurance factor for them in terms of the toughness of it. They don't have that crossover game like the other two do, including Florida State coming up for North Carolina. But that stretch for the Tar Heels is brutal, particularly coming off a game they needed to chip and claw to win against Pitt. Then you go to Florida State. Then you've got an emerging Hokies team coming in on a week of rest. So, yeah, theirs is very difficult, and the same can be true of Pitt when you look at who they've got to play coming up as well. So, and then Miami, which is interesting, it becomes the last team that you play if you're yep. the Hokies in that stretch, and it shouldn't be. Obviously, you're not the last team. I shouldn't say that. The third team you play in that stretch, and it shouldn't be because probably – outside of what we're seeing in Blacksburg at the moment, they've got the most complete effort on the field right now. So it's going to be a tremendous amount of fun. And this, Wes, going back to when we were talking in Charlotte at the ACC kickoff, this is kind of what we were expecting, right? It wasn't necessarily all these teams playing as well as we thought they would, but we figured it would be a little bit of a mess heading into October. I think it's just a mess at a higher level. Oh, I like that. I'm going to trademark that.
I like that.
It's a mess at a higher level because all these teams are in it, not because there's nobody that's playing well. It's because everybody's playing well.
Yeah, here's Miami's rundown for the next couple of weeks. At Georgia Tech, Florida State, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, and then Pitt. Their stretch goes into November. We will see. Let the fun begin as conference play opens up and the Hokies get to at least rest and prepare another week for it. There is no rest for us because now it is time for a lightning round. John Lazer's got five questions for me. I've got five questions for him. The floor is yours, sir.
Well, this one comes courtesy of a getting ready for work Renee. She wants to know, Wes, is pumpkin the most diverse flavor now in American cuisine?
Seeing how in the past week I've had pumpkin birthday cake, pumpkin coffee, pumpkin candy, and have experienced pumpkin Cheerios for the first time ever, and they were fantastic.
Pumpkin Cheerios.
They're actually really, really good. I'm saying yes. Here's my question for you. More fun to call. This is appropriate for last week. More fun to call. A punt return, a block field goal, or a block punt?
Yeah, I'll put them in order, actually. It's a punt return is by far and away the most fun to call, particularly one that you could see unfolding like Greg Stroman's, where it's a punter out kicking his coverage, so he has room at the beginning. A punt block is second most fun because you can generally see who blocked it, and there's a good opportunity for a scoop and score or something along those lines. And a field goal is not all that fun, to be honest, because you don't usually expect it first and foremost and second. It's nearly impossible to identify quickly who blocked it unless you have a great spotter like I do and Johnny Alga and pointed out that it was the big man Tim Settle. So I'd put him in those order, in that order. Wes, Ryder Cup this week. It's on my high school's home golf course. Does it have your interest as a casual, very casual golf fan?
It actually does, and I think there's a couple different elements of why it does. It's, you had Rory McIlroy having a big weekend last week. Kind of smoked their number one, smoked our number one late on Sunday. So you have that element going in. It is now following the death of Arnold Palmer. You got the big boys. You got Phil and Tiger there in different capacity. And it's kind of that international flair which golf still provides. It's the big names in the big stage. And you look at the Sunday NFL games at 4 o'clock, they're kind of lousy. This could be a fun Sunday of golf. I am actually, as a casual fan, interested in the Ryder Cup. One episode of Designated Survivor in. Does Tom Kirkman have your support? Will you be turning in for week two, or was it a one and done on the new president of the United States?
Well, I've got some question marks when it comes to the plot, but I see where they're going here. I thought that Tom Kirkman, off the outset of the show, was very meek and very un-Jack Bauer-like and didn't seem very presidential or powerful. But then it's like, hey, let's take a commercial break. Let's come back on the other side. And all of a sudden, we're going to do this my way. And he's calling out generals and other high-ranking members of the government. So I thought that was about turnabout, but I think we needed it because I wasn't ready to root for the meekness that was Tom Kirkman. So I'm going to give it another show. But I didn't exactly love the pilot, to say the least.
10 o'clock tonight on ABC.
Nice plug. Hey, buddy, Katy Perry did a naked PSA encouraging people to vote in whatever they sleep in. If that were the case, how would you be showing up at the polls?
Underwear and a sweatshirt. I'm that weird balance of cold and hot all at the same time. Like, I don't like pants. They're too restrictive. But I'm always cold, so I usually sleep in a sweatshirt and, the kind of like the Under Armour underwear. That's how I would roll.
You got more descriptive on that than I was hoping.
Sorry, I wanted to be thorough. Then great, you'll love this question. Tom Brady sunbathes naked in Europe with his bride. On the bye week, you're in Europe, John. Sunbathing naked, when in Rome, or pass?
Well, here's the deal. It's not so much about not wanting to do it naked. It's about not wanting to do it at all. One, I have very tremendously bad ADD, and I get bored trying to sunbathe. Two, while I tan well on my face and forearms, the rest of me, not so much. It's more of a painful type pinking and then back to white process. I don't really want to have any part of that, and nobody on any of those beaches wants to see that. So I think I'd go with what I usually go with. I'd find a local watering hole and try to use my humor as a way in instead.
Next.
Why does Vin Scully's retirement seem to represent something bigger for baseball, or at least something bigger that we're losing in baseball?
I'm going to steal what you told me from my column on Sunday. It feels like baseball is a game of nostalgia, It is a game that we love the past and the history of, and Vince Scully is a great storyteller. And he's a guy who can appreciate the game for the game, and you can sit there and you can take him in and you can enjoy him. And in our rushed, as you said, ADD, like instant gratification society, it's just, it feels like a great part of that, if not the last element of that, is gone. And there's nobody like him. There will never be anybody like him. And I guess the game doesn't set up for anybody to be like him ever again. And that's what feels like the big loss. One more. John Lazor, you've called baseball. You've called minor league baseball. What we saw at Yankee Stadium last night and the proposal going all wrong but ending up good. Have you ever seen one that just ended really, really bad?
I've seen somebody say no before at a minor league game in Altoona, Pennsylvania. And to be honest with you, with the people that were involved in it, I would have said no as well had I been that gal. But I'm not going to say that you expect that, because I think you at least expect people to have the human decency to fake a yes. And then you get out to the parking lot, and I don't want to get too personal on you, buddy, but and then have them change their mind.
Yeah,
that's right. Win for the win. But, you know, you'd like to think that they would have the respect to do that. But I've never seen anybody lose the rig. But I thought the play-by-play from Carl Ravitch of that was priceless.
You know, a guy gets dumped one time in a Diamond parking lot, and his best friend can never let it go.
That's one time. We had plans, man. It was a couple's night out.
Thank you, Lays. Have a good bye week.
You got it, buddy. Have a good one.
John Lazor. That goes back to an old story. I'm sure you've heard about this before. Lays and I were supposed to go out on a couple's night with our significant other, and mine, well, dumped me in the Diamond parking lot before we went out the door.
Yeah, but are you a loser?
Yes, I used to be. Now I'm a happily married man. Wes McElroy, Fox Sports 910.